Good evening, Truth Seekers. This is the Molloy Program on the Nova M Radio Network. Thank you very much for tuning in tonight. We do appreciate it. I'm a little bit tongue-tied right now because I've just, for the first 5 minutes between 9 o'clock Eastern Time and 9:05, which is when 9:06, when Kathy starts to play the theme music, I usually flip through, to MSNBC and CNN just to see if we are invading another country yet. And I know Larry King is on at this time, but I got to Larry CNN, and there's Larry King talking with Tammy Faye Messner. Remember her, Tammy Baker, Jim and Tammy? I don't know who to be more feel more pity for, her or Larry King. She is just about 2 inches away from her coffin. She must weigh 60 pounds, eaten up with cancer, and there she sits on Larry King's program with King interviewing her. I don't know when it was apparently it was recorded. I don't know. What a shock. So that's why I'm a little tongue-tied right now. Speaking of, oh, God, King will do anything, won't he? Larry King will do anything. It just doesn't matter. And of course, people will watch. Oh, God, that was just hideous. I mean, I have nothing against death, nothing at all. Just drop it. The National Intelligence Estimate that was released, I believe, yesterday, and we have been talking about, most people have been talking about it, or it may have been released Monday, I don't know, in the past 24, 48 hours, that national intelligence estimate put together by 16 of the U.S.'s crack intelligence organizations, which, bottom line, says that everything Bush has done has been an abject failure where it concerns Afghanistan and Iraq, even the Middle East, the Israeli-Palestinian issue, Lebanon, everything. Everything has been, Iran, everything has been a massive, unqualified failure. And as a result of this massive, unqualified failure, the United States is at greater risk than since any time in its history, with the possible exception of the run-up to the War of 1812. I added that part. It's not in the report. But if you read the report or even give it a cursory glance, you can't but come to any other conclusion. Bush has put this entire country, our territories, ourselves, everything, all of us, in grave danger. He has also spawned, with his actions, an internationally based terrorist organization. Anybody who blows up cars and people and babies and humans on a daily basis, like George Bush or like the insurgents in Iraq, are, to me, terrorists. If they can justify their actions, that's between them and their moral sense, but no one, I condone no one, whether they are Israelis or Palestinians or Fatah or Hezbollah or Iran or Iraq or the Sunnis or the Shia or the United States, I don't care who it is. Damn them all for acts of terror. Now, don't email me about acts of terror justified against an occupying force. I don't want to hear that because I don't agree. Acts of resistance are justified, but acts of terror are not. Simply put, don't debate it with me, don't argue with me, don't send me any of these smarmy emails I've been getting in the past 3 or 4 days about my position on certain issues. Just make your own conclusion about blowing up people, innocent people. So now it appears, since George W. Bush has been such a massive, perpetrated such a massive failure of leadership on this country at a time when we desperately needed that leadership immediately after the attack on September 11, 2001, if you believe the official story. What should have transpired and occurred immediately was a massive effort to track down the perpetrators. And if the intelligence indicated that the perpetrators came from bin Laden's nest in Afghanistan, then that's where all of our force should have been focused. And for a while it was. And then it wasn't. So now, according to the NIE that was released the other day, the Badlands that border Afghanistan and consist of, for the most part, Western Pakistan, that territory now allegedly is where all of this evilness is being evilness is being generated. That's where bin Laden and his dialysis machine are hiding. That's where Mullah Muhammad Omar, that's where the top leadership of Al-Qaeda, except for the top leadership they caught again today in Iraq. You know, they always catch the top. We got the main. But all of this is going on now in Western Pakistan and Eastern Afghanistan, in the mountains, in the tribal areas, they call it, the Badlands, the place where nations, imperial nations, go to die, whether it's Russia or Great Britain or the United States, that's where, or China. It doesn't make any difference. This is where imperial nations go, imperialist nations go, when they want to die. Alexander the Great, doesn't make any difference. You go to that section of the world, now referred to as Western Pakistan and Eastern Afghanistan. That's where you go when you say, hey, listen, you know, I'm tired of being a world power. I think it's time for me to commit suicide. So that's where you go. And what is the Bush crime family talking about now? Reports are swirling, as they say, that there is talk of maybe, possibly, could happen. It was on the news today. They even interviewed Pakistan officials, members of the Pakistan military. There's a chance, maybe, possibly, the United States is going to invade Pakistan. How's that? Pakistan. Oh, it won't be called an invasion. It'll be called something else. But it's Pakistan's territory. So what do you call it when the United States military decides, oh, wait a second, not the United States military, but the United States war planners, murderers, killers, the Cheney Bush cabal, when they decide, we know for sure that Mullah Muhammad Omar and bin Laden are in that, in those particular mountains, so we're going to go in there. Now, where are they going to get the troops? Isn't that interesting? Where are they going to get the troops? Where are they going to get the troops? You know how many people it will require to invade Pakistan and Eastern Afghanistan? Do you know how many? Do you have? Huh? Can you guess? Maybe a million? Certainly half a million. Oh my God! These people are just insane. They're completely insane. Sean and Alan, Texas, wrote to me and said, Mike, one of your callers made a really interesting comment last night along the lines of, we can forgive them for killing our sons, but we can never forgive them for making us kill theirs. Actually, that was Golda Meir, I believe, is to whom that is accredited. But Sean writes, it occurred to me that when we reach that point, we will have arrived at a fifth and final box. Remember, there's the soap, ballot, jury, and ammo. Sean says, the fifth and final box, the pine. Hear you. I hear you. And our North Metro Atlanta military correspondent, Sharon, has sent me a brief article here that retired Major General John Batiste, remember the former division commanding general in Iraq? He says that he is disappointed in the way most Republican senators voted to oppose the Democrat-backed legislation that passed the U.S. House of Representatives last week. Bush, of course, is expected to veto the measure. He slammed these senators, Republican senators. He said, as a lifelong Republican, I am disappointed with the minority in the Senate. Now, Batiste serves on the board of VoteVets.org, an anti-Iraq activist organization. Batiste said, without a real diplomatic, economic, and political surge in Iraq, the president is continuing to sacrifice American blood and dollars on a conflict that cannot be militarily resolved. And most Republicans have just voted to rubber stamp that.
Doing talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. So, retired Major General John Batiste, the former division commanding general in Iraq, says he is disappointed, his word, in Republican senators for opposing legislation to evacuate forces the hell out of Iraq. He says, as a lifelong Republican, I'm disappointed with Republicans in the Senate. Without a real diplomatic, economic, and political surge in Iraq, the president is continuing to sacrifice American blood and dollars in a conflict that cannot be militarily resolved. And most Republicans have just voted to rubber stamp that. He went on to say, quote, our incredible all-volunteer force cannot sustain the current pace, and America desperately needs a focused Middle East strategy. Conservatives never have stood for using our military for nation-building or refereeing civil wars, and unfortunately, politicians, like many Republicans in the Senate, are getting away from that. Then he added, their vote, Republicans' vote, was inconsistent with the true conservative pro-military policy. Yeah, let's remember that. The Republicans, once again, have, over the past 25, 30 years, ever since the psychopathic dunce Reagan, have convinced the American public that every time Democrats take power, they weaken the military. Can we finally put that to rest? This is nothing that Bush or Pappy Bush or Reagan, nothing that they did over a period of 20 years was in any way pro-military or in support of the military. No Republican in Congress is pro-military, not one. They are cowards to begin with. They don't believe in serving their country, with two or three notable exceptions. And the first sound of guns going off, they encase themselves in armor like Joe Lieberman does, or like John McCain asks for air support while he walks through a market in Baghdad. Major General John Batiste served in the Army for 31 years, and his final assignment in the Army was commanding general of the 1st Infantry Division, the Big Red One, from August 2002 to June 2005. He carried out successful peace enforcement operations in Kosovo and combat operations in Iraq in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom 2. Yada, 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 yada. He is a warrior. He is a killer. He is somebody who goes into combat with one idea. Kill and destroy, and it's over. That's what Batiste is about. But he also understands that where Bush has put the United States military is in a situation that is unwinnable. How many people have to tell this dumb bastard in the White House that what he has done is A, unwinnable, B, puts the entire country and every American at risk, C, has cost the lives of hundreds of thousands of people for nothing, and D and E and F and G and H all the way through the alphabet? What's it going to take for this stubborn, ignorant little bastard in the White House? What's it going to take, huh? Maybe it takes Cheney not surviving his next battery implant operation, because if Cheney's vampirish voice is out of Bush's ears, maybe, maybe somebody else can whisper to him, George, you've really effed up real bad. General Wesley Clark said, quote, when we went to war, we used a terrible terminology for this. We called it shock and awe, coupled by a statement by an American general that said, quote, we don't count Iraqi casualties, end quote. What? They're not people? They don't count? The thin veneer of the UN resolution that we had may have provided an element of legality, but it did not provide legitimacy. And then Clark adds, I didn't serve 34 years in uniform for a country that tortures people. What's it going to take? We're going to have Joe Wilson on next week. Maybe we'll ask the former ambassador. What's it going to take to get this bastard out of office? All right, when we come back, I have an email here, two emails. One from the rifleman. U.S. Navy retired, former Navy SEAL, a Navy SEAL instructor, and he took the time to write to me, and I want you to hear what he said. This is in response to what I said the other night. Why do the soldiers continue to do this? Why doesn't somebody in a command and control position bring this to an end?
Got the flying monkey right blues? Here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
Twenty-six before the hour. All right, I want you to hear this this email that I got from a guy who signs himself as the Rifleman. He says, Mike, I'm a 24-year active duty, now retired, former U.S. Navy SEAL and Navy SEAL instructor. I did three involuntary tours in Southeast Asia during that, quote, crazy Asian war, end quote. I've been retired from the service since 1989, so I don't have any active duty contacts anymore. Most of even my trainees are also retired, so I don't have the real inside scoop on what is going on in the minds of the current senior NCOs and command senior non-commissioned officers. The thing that puzzles me most about this Iraq fiasco is why the senior non-commissioned officers and command senior NCOs don't take control of this failed situation. In my day, when I was a command senior NCO, I could have and would have taken care of my troops. And then parenthetically, he writes, knowing that it was an act of Congress that promoted me to senior NCO, I would have rested on my assurance that it takes an act of Congress to bust me. Here's what he says he would have done. He says, I could have and would have made sure that my command was inconveniently not ready for action. Next, my command's equipment would have been habitually unserviceable. Next, my personnel would be driving the medical corps insane with every hangnail and tummy ache. Next, my supply NCOs would be driving the supply officer crazy with equipment request chit after equipment request chit. Next, my commanding officer would dread waking up every morning with me standing at the foot of his bed bitching about the condition of my equipment, my men, and anything else I could find to bitch about. In short, My men would find themselves undertaking about half as many missions as the brass has in mind for them. My men would have half as much exposure as the brass has in mind for them. My command would realize half as many killed in actions and wounded in actions as the brass expects and is willing to accept of my men. As a senior, as a command senior NCO, I would do my job, which is bring as many of my men home alive as I can. My generation of command senior NCOs would never forget for one second what our job was. Keep our men alive and screw the brass if we had to get our job done. Mike, the senior NCOs and command senior NCOs can do this in Iraq just as we old dogs did it in Southeast Asia. The question is, why aren't they doing it? Is it, as I fear, we don't have the quality of senior NCOs and command senior NCOs that we had in the day of the draft? Before we retired, did we old warhorse NCOs fail to teach today's NCOs what their job really is? God save our military and bestow its current NCOs and command senior NCOs with the wisdom and sense of duty that we tired and retired old warriors once knew. And he signs it to Rifleman, U.S. Navy retired. Well, he makes a good case. During the draft, you would get an awful lot of, I'm not speaking for or against the military, and I'm just making an observation, and I think anyone can make this observation. When there is a draft in place, you have an awful lot of talented people who may decide that they just don't want to pick up a rifle and walk into a jungle and be shot at or try to kill somebody. So they go to OCS, they become senior command NCOs. They get into positions of, if not control, certainly command. And they have the power to make the kind of little decisions that can affect the outcome of an entire military action. Remember the term fragging? I don't know how many of you remember that term from our adventure in Southeast Asia. I'm sure the rifleman would remember that. Fragging, where if you had a lieutenant or even a commanding officer who insisted on sending you into a meat grinder every day that you knew was a waste of time and you decided you weren't going to die, you would just make sure that he did. And then it was over. And I have heard from the veterans, combat veterans in World War II, combat veterans in Vietnam, that was one of the issues that prompted the United States military establishment to decide it might be time to bring the boys home. Too many low-ranking officers in positions that could determine an entire platoon's living or dying were winding up themselves being killed by their own people. This is something that was not reported, so I've been told. By the press, and it was something that the United States military kept rather quiet. So I don't know. I have no idea why this is not happening, except for the fact that when you don't have a draft and it is an all volunteer force, and in the United States Army now, and I don't know about the other branches of the military, but the Army has lowered its standards to the point where it takes convicted felons and people who can't pass IQ tests to get into the service. That's how desperate Bush is. The United States Army is now also taking people who are borderline nuts. I don't know the right term. So don't, if you're a psychologist, don't send me an email busting me for using a slang term like nuts, okay? But they're borderline. Borderline personality defects, but they're not the kind of people you want in the military. But Bush, with his pressure, with his mismanagement of everything this stupid man has touched, including the military, insists that the military lower its standards. Just get me the bodies. I don't care. And now they're talking about an invasion in Pakistan. And as Reggie points out, if our people go there, you know what they'll be called? Huh? Say it louder. That's right. Advisors. We have them in how many countries? Don't we have an entire operation in Colombia? Little country in northern South America. Then Michael writes, regarding militarism, hi, Mike, much as I love bashing Bush, and much of this administration deserves it. I wonder if you could spend a day or even an hour per week reminding listeners of the big picture, i.e. that a lot of this mess we're in transcends party and is almost a natural result of the momentum of the good old military-industrial complex, or just plain old militarism. Our country and culture have been steeped in it for at least a century, if not longer, and especially during the latter 20th century. Read and then recommend Chalmers Johnson's brilliant trilogy published by the American Empire Project. As evil as these repugnances are, I sometimes wonder how different things would be right now if Gore and Lieberman had gotten in 2000. We'd probably already be in Iran the way Lieberman froths at the mouth. Michael. And here is something that a lot of you have emailed me about today. I'll just pick this one from Eric. Mike, it's getting very serious. I served on a federal grand jury in Portland, Oregon 2 years ago. We indicted, against my vote, the so-called Portland 7 terror cell. I don't condone what the so-called Portland 7 did, but what the U.S. government did and is doing is infinitely worse. Bush signed an executive order yesterday that essentially outlaws political dissent. Quote, any person determined by the Secretary of the Treasury in consultation with the Secretary of State and the Secretary of Defense to have committed or to pose a significant threat of committing a threat of interfering with our operations in Iraq, yada, 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 will have all assets frozen and property will be seized if the Bush administration thinks it should be seized. Now, that last bit, Eric adds, you know, in his voice, not the executive order. He points out that all of the citizens currently incarcerated because of their so-called terrorist activities, according to this new directive, are conspirators or persons, quote, deemed to pose a significant threat, end quote. What this executive order amounts to, Eric writes, is the authorization for preemptive strikes against citizens who, quote, pose a significant threat, end quote. Now, the executive order, you can get it online. Just go to whitehouse.gov in the news releases section, and it's there. It was just issued yesterday, I believe. And trying to work my way around all the legalese here, it says, by the authority vested in me as president by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, including the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. Huh? The National Emergencies Act, and Section 301, Title 3, United States Code, I, George W. Bush, President of the United States, find that due to the unusual and extraordinary threat to the national security and foreign policy of the United States posed by acts of violence threatening the peace and stability of Iraq and undermining efforts to promote economic reconstruction and political reform in Iraq, blah, 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 all property and interests in property of the following persons that are in the United States, blah, 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 are blocked and may not be transferred, paid, exported, withdrawn, or otherwise dealt in. And then he defines who is involved, who would be subject to having every single thing you owned seized by the Bush crime family. Okay? All of this stuff is being put in place. Do you understand this? Do you understand the seriousness of this? Oh, my God. I will give you the breakdown when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Bush disguises blood, loves his patriotism, convincing the living to love operation. Let's get him. But when he realized we don't support their attacks, they needed something to distract. Huh, and brag. Let's further demonize his Afghanis. So Americans cheer while we kill their innocent families. And what better place to start a war? To build a pipeline to get the oil that they have wanted before.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. So the latest directive from the Bush crime family, it was Chris in Phoenix who sent this to me. I know it's out there, but thanks, Chris. And it's at whitehouse.gov And it's in the news releases or the press releases section. And it was released yesterday. It's an executive order signed by this psychopathic bastard blocking property, seizing property, assets of certain persons who threaten stabilization efforts in Iraq. Think about that for a minute, okay? Now, who's involved? Any person determined by the Secretary of the Treasury in consultation with the Secretary of State and the Secretary of Defense. Think about that. Who has committed or may pose a significant risk of committing an act or acts of violence that have the purpose or effect of A, threatening the peace or stability of Iraq or the government of Iraq, or B, undermining efforts to promote economic reconstruction and political reform in Iraq, or to provide humanitarian assistance to the Iraqi people. Any persons who have materially assisted, that means sponsored, provided financial, material, logistical, or technical support for, blah, 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 or any person whose property and interest in property are blocked pursuant to this order. So in other words, if someone you know is victimized by this order and you try to assist that person by providing financial support or technical support or whatever, they will come for you. The prohibition, there's more, and then it says the prohibitions in subsection A of this section include, but are not limited to, the making of any contribution of funds, goods, or services by, to, or for the benefit of any person whose property and interest in property are blocked pursuant to this order. What does that mean? If you're a lawyer and you want to assist in defending this person who has had all of his or her assets seized by this corrupt bastard, then you too, Mr. or Ms. Attorney, can have everything seized in your little world. And it goes on. Any conspiracy formed to violate any of the prohibitions set forth in this order is prohibited. Any conspiracy. That's two people getting together and wanting to challenge the order. And for purposes of this order, it says the term person means an individual or entity. The term entity means a partnership, association, trust, joint venture, corporation, group, subgroup, or other organization. And the term United States person means, surprise, surprise, any person in the United States. Oh, and towards the end it says there need be no prior notice of a decision to seize everything you own. And then the last, section six, there's only eight sections. Section six says the Secretary of the Treasury, in consultation with the Secretary of State and the Secretary of Defense, is hereby authorized to take such actions. Signed, George W. Bush, the White House. Well, there you are. Dissent in this country has now entered into an arena where it may mean your bank account, your house, your clothing, your apartment, everything about you can be seized by the Bush crime family. Is that an impeachable offense? Apparently not. Prairie 2 says, regarding Pakistan and the plans that are in the works now for us to invade that country with advisors, Prairie 2 writes, "Hey Mike, Pakistan is where Negroponte has been hanging around lately. Apparently the Bush crime family is messing with President Pervez. The Red Mosque massacre the other day has Negroponte death squad written all over it. The rumor that the U.S. might invade western Pakistan would be enough to get old Pervez to do almost anything." Is that where? I wonder what happened to Negroponte. Wherever Negroponte goes, mass death seems to materialize. The death squads, forget Central America. That was so long ago, as Bush says. It's almost off the historical clock. Let's think instead about what happened in Iraq. There were no death squads until John Negroponte was appointed the ambassador. Then all of a sudden, Sunni and Shia death squads appeared. Now this cadaverous bastard is wandering around Pakistan. And all of a sudden, Pervez Musharraf has his own Branch Davidian event to deal with. How many people were butchered in the Red Mosque the other day? 100? We don't know. How many were women and children? The reports that are coming out said an inordinate number. Musharraf ordering his military to attack his own people. Oh my God, this has Negroponte's stamp on it. It's pretty astonishing. It's pretty astonishing. Speaking of dead women and children, this is one of those nights where you might want to just go watch TV because I really don't have a whole lot of uplifting. Well, come to think of it, I never do. But this next item is damn near put me on one of my weeping jags, especially when I read the story and then put Molly to bed tonight. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It's, excuse me, about 7 past the hour. It's in several newspapers, but it's from the Associated Press. There's a trial going on, as I'm sure you know, at Camp Pendleton, California. Several Marines are on trial for the butchery that occurred in Haditha on November 19th, 2005. According to the Associated Press, a Marine charged with murdering two girls and killing several other Iraqis gave orders to shoot into a room full of children and young women. That's according to a squad member who testified today. Lance Corporal Stephen Tatum then went into the room himself. He's the one that gave the order. Followed by a loud noise, his M16 gunfire or a grenade. That's according to Lance Corporal Umberto Mendoza. Mendoza said yesterday, quote, "I told him there's just women and kids in the room." He replied, "Well, shoot them," end quote. Mendoza was with Tatum and two other Marines when they went to clear houses in Haditha, Iraq on 19 November 2005 in the aftermath of a roadside bomb that killed a Marine and wounded two others. Marines responded by killing 24 civilians, resulting in the biggest U.S. criminal case involving civilian deaths to come out of the Iraq War. A military prosecutor in this case, Lieutenant Colonel Paul Atterbury, asked Mendoza whether he thought it was possible Tatum was joking about shooting women and children. Mendoza, who's testifying with a grant of immunity, said, "Sir, he was very serious." Mendoza said he shot a man in the first house. The squad entered and believed he was dead. Tatum went into the room where the body lay and fired more shots. Mendoza said, quote, he said it was to make sure he was dead, end quote. At the second house, Mendoza said he shot a man as the team went in. He then stayed in the kitchen while squad members threw a grenade, and moments later found a woman in her 20s cowering in a back room with four or five children. Mendoza said he returned to the house later as part of a body retrieval team and saw that the woman and the children were dead from multiple wounds that could have been caused by M16 fire. Mendoza, who was among seven Marines given immunity in the case, told investigators in March 2006 he shot at least two men because they were in houses declared hostile. Mendoza told investigators, quote, I was following my training that all individuals in a hostile house are to be shot, end quote. Tatum's attorney, Jack Zimmerman, brought up a polygraph test that Mendoza failed after changing his account of events. Mendoza replied he was telling the truth and freely admitted lying initially to protect his fellow Marines. Attorney Zimmerman asked, you'd lie to protect your fellow Marines but not to help yourself? Yes, Mendoza said. Mendoza is a Venezuelan citizen who's been promised U.S. citizenship. His application would be denied if he were charged with any crime. But he said that he had not told any government lawyers about the content of his testimony before he was granted immunity in December 2006, shortly before charges were filed against Tatum and other Marines. So our friend Mendoza here has his U.S. citizenship application still pending. According to a report by the Naval Criminal Investigative Service, dated 17 May 2006, Tatum told investigators that he shot women and children because, quote, women and kids can hurt you too, end quote. Mendoza was the second member of Tatum's squad to testify on the second day of preliminary hearings to determine whether he would be tried for murder, Tatum. Also yesterday, Sergeant Sanek De La Cruz testified that after the deaths, Tatum disapproved of how the United States was waging war and wished the troops had more leeway to shoot. Tatum, said De La Cruz, poked fun at a squad member who asked permission before shooting and said he, Tatum, thought the war should be fought the way it was in biblical scriptures, quote, where you just go in the city and kill every living thing, end quote. At the opening of Tatum's hearing Monday, his attorney said Tatum believed he was following procedure by confronting a threat with deadly force. Besides the murder of two girls in one house, Tatum is charged with negligent homicide in the deaths of two men, a woman, and a young boy. He is also accused of assaulting another boy and a girl. If convicted of murder, he faces up to life in prison. The squad leader, Staff Sergeant Frank Wetterich, is charged with murdering 18 Iraqis. His preliminary hearing is set for August 22nd. Women and children can hurt you too. Yeah, I guess they can. So kill them all. A 20-something woman and five or six children cowering in a back room in the house where our people went in. And one of the squad members came back for a body retrieval mission later on. He found that 20-something women and all the children shot to death. This is what George Bush has unleashed. This is what Dick Cheney has ordered. This is what our commanders allow. This is what the rules of engagement dictate. Murder them all. Shoot them all. The rules of engagement, according to Mr. Tatum, kill them all. If only we could go in like they did in biblical times and murder an entire city. Good God. You know, I think, let that sink in, and it won't sink in. You know, it can't. It can't. Okay. I guess there's no point to sit here with a radio program and be broadcasting silence. That doesn't make any sense. Another editorial, this one at BuzzFlash, from Elliot Cohen, PhD. We quoted something by Elliot Cohen the other night. He is a media ethicist and critic. And he was the first prize winner of the 2007 Project Censored Award. His most recent book is The Last Days of Democracy, How Big Media and Power-Hungry Government Are Turning America into a Dictatorship. But he is suggesting that this summer, America officially will become a totalitarian state. He poses that as a question. And then he makes it a statement. He says, the unfolding of events over the past 7 years and the recent emergence of certain key facts point to the prospect of an ominous conclusion. Before the summer is up, America will be brought under martial law with George W. Bush and Dick Cheney at the helm. In May 2007, Bush posted a national continuity policy to the White House website that bypasses Congress and puts him in charge of all three branches of the federal government if there is a, quote, catastrophic emergency, end quote, vaguely defined to include anything from a destructive hurricane to a terrorist attack. This leaves democracy in America dangling on a thin thread of chance that such a, quote, catastrophe, end quote, doesn't happen. On Wednesday last, Michael Chertoff said he had a gut feeling that Al-Qaeda will launch another terrorist attack on the U.S. mainland sometime this summer. Chertoff's gut feeling comes on the heels of the latest national intelligence estimate, which maintains that in the past year, Al-Qaeda has reconstituted its core structure and has grown stronger along the Pakistan-Afghanistan border. And it goes on and on and on. And when you couple that with the executive order that Bush signed yesterday, blocking property of people who threaten the so-called stabilization efforts in Iraq, maybe Elliot Cohen is right. You think?
Fighting evil, and we will continue to fight evil, and we will not stop until we defeat evil.
You know, I feel the same way about the Bush crime family. From Swamp Rat, who is whose artwork appears very frequently at Democratic Underground. He writes, way at Mike, I stayed up last night to watch our Congress critters finally work for their salary. The most impressive senator had to be John McCain, though I don't mean that in a positive sense. As I suffered his disjointed psychobabble and worthless maps, I wondered how the hell this man still holds an elected office. John McCain is certifiable, yet there he was, rambling on for the Brazilianth time about, stay the course! Mike, when a person repeats failed ideas over and over despite deadly consequences and everyone else on earth tells you, I wouldn't do that if I were you, you could put your eye out there, kid. Isn't that an indication of insanity? Where were the men in white suits with large nets to take him to a nice comfy room where he can be cared for and given powerful designer antipsychotics? What a depraved creature John McCain has become. almost like Gollum. Peace from New Orleans. Thanks, Swap Rat. All right, let's do some phone calls. We're starting to get way behind here. Starting with Tony, who is calling from Virginia, listening on Sirius Left. Hey, Tony, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah, I was calling earlier. I was listening to you when you were talking about some of the fragging incidents in Vietnam and talking about today's Army.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm a retired Army First Sergeant. I have a daughter who's serving as a lieutenant in the Army and a son who's a sergeant. And, well, today's Army is totally different. I mean, Vietnam, we literally snatched kids up off the street, gave them a few months of training, and threw them into the meat grinder.
Right.
The difference between then and today is today you ask to join. You're trained and you're sent over as a whole unit after several months of training up together. If we tried to do to today's Army like we did in Vietnam, a lot of retired guys like myself would be kicking down the doors of Congress. Because it would be, we would go find some of our old running buddies in the Pentagon and beat them senseless, because that's not the way to run an Army. I served 22 years in the Army and I couldn't have served 22 days in the 1960s.
Are you saying, Tony, that today's Army is well-equipped, well-trained, and ready for a legitimate combat?
Yeah, totally. The difference from my opinion, is when you were talking about the situation with the Marines a few minutes ago, the difference is the politicians, the president, and the Congress, they really need to think really, really hard before they send our people to war, because soldiers, they're trained. From the time you start your training, you're a warrior. We have a very, very dangerous military, and if allowed to fight the way they're trained, they can destroy anyone. But the big problem with ours, like you call them the crime family, I like that. I saw a T-shirt like that. Was the day Baghdad fell, first off, Mr. Rumsfeld didn't listen to the senior Army commanders who wanted fight the war in a certain way, the way they had been training to do it for years.
Okay, Tony, let me interrupt. How long were you in the military?
22 years.
Okay. In all your experience in the military, were you taught or trained or come to your own conclusion that the United States military should not be used to invade a country and kill people, a country that did nothing to us?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. So anybody involved in this occupation or the invasion of Iraq was in fact committing a war crime?
No.
Why not?
First and foremost, as part of your oath, you agree to obey the orders of the President of the United States, no matter which.
Hold on. There's Uniform Code of Military Justice tells every single person who goes in the military that they have the right, the obligation, and the duty to refuse an unlawful order.
That's absolutely correct.
All right.
Why
again,
those Marines deserve to go to Leavenworth.
Again, I ask you, if the war was illegitimate, then every order is unlawful, is it not?
No, not necessarily.
Well, how do you manage to split hairs and tell me and this audience that an illegal invasion of a country that did nothing to us based on lies and deception is okay?
Because the Constitution gives Congress the authority to send troops in. And the president has his commander-in-chief of the military.
I'm not arguing that point with you. If the president told you tomorrow or active military to invade England, would that be a legitimate war?
Of course not.
But you're saying soldiers should still break the law and follow a madman? Is that what you're saying?
That's what the law tells them to do.
No, the law does not tell them to obey an order that is illegal. No, it doesn't.
Actually, it does.
Okay. Tony, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. I hope you have a good evening. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
On the back nine, I was gung-ho, gunning-ho. If I just had other priorities, like feeling more at ease, I'd say bomb them to hell, but I'd rather not be Kentucky Fried.
Chicken hawk.
Call me a chicken hawk.
Yeah.
deny the right to speak our minds. For the terrorists, free expression can be grounds for execution.
Well, Tony's phone call certainly has generated a spate of emails here. This is just one example. This is from William from Hollywood. Mike, this is the sort of fellow who scares the hell out of me. According to him, if martial law were declared, any citizen would be fair game. Correct me if I'm wrong. No, you're right. That mindset is what we hammered home and shaped it into international law at the Nuremberg trials after World War II, that there was no such thing any longer as I was just following orders as I commit these atrocities. That's why we have Marines on trial here and soldiers on trial there. That's why the respect for the United States military is now in the toilet. Whereas at one point the U.S. military was seen as not only an effective fighting force when it was necessary, but was also seen as an organization that got respect because of what it did when it wasn't fighting. It was able to respond the way organizations, only organizations that are involved in chain of command can respond. I'm referring to National Guard and Reserve, who would assist when natural disasters struck this country or any country if they asked for our help. And apparently that day is gone. As far as Tony's comment that our people are well trained, that flies in the face of everything that you hear from soldiers and their families, that they are not well trained, they are not well equipped, they are undisciplined, they are put in a situation that it would be impossible for anyone to deal with. I'm not going after the soldiers here, but come on, let's be honest. They are not trained. They are not equipped. How many soldiers have to stand up in a press conference with this psychopathic bastard that used to run the Pentagon and say, Mr. Rumsfeld, why don't we have under-armored vehicles so we're all being blown to pieces? Sorry, Tony. I don't know where your mind is, but it ain't where these soldiers who are fighting where they are. I guess that when you are forced into a combat situation, he talks about a lot of people talk, well, these are all volunteers. I'm sure every one of these guys and women, when they signed up for four or five tours of duty in the same filthy combat zone where they know eventually they're going to have an arm or a leg blown off or their lives ended because they have to keep doing repeat tours. Oh, sure. That was all explained to them, eh? Huh? Sure it was. And as far as entering into an illegal war, as far as following orders that are not legitimate, I don't know. I guess they've changed Uniform Code of Military Justice. It's all been turned around where you're supposed to do exactly as you're told. See that kid? Go kill it. Well, but sir, kill it! Okay. Really? Back to your phone calls. Mike is calling from New York City, listening on the internet. Hey, Mike.
What's up, Mike?
You are.
Man, what the hell, dude? I feel like I'm walking around with a pink tutu on or something. This society is upside down. Am I the only one that sees checkmate here?
I hear you.
On the real, dude. I mean, from the Real ID Act to the Patriot Act to the Military Commissions Act to the updating of the Insurrection Act to the National Security Directive to the domestic exercises. You think this dude is going to give this up for the next president? What are we, fools?
It's beginning to feel that way, isn't it? It's beginning to feel that way. I keep not wanting to believe that anything is coming in November of 08 except an election. But it's getting harder and harder to hold that thought. You know what I'm saying, Mike?
When the benefit is this big, you got to look at this like an insurance company. When the benefit is that big, you have to question the motive. I don't believe in coincidental benefits. I don't.
I hear you.
I really don't. You can't tell me that he wrote this stuff down and they created all this for Hillary Clinton.
Mm-mm. No, and I had a mouthful of coffee when I said, mm-mm. No, it's not. You're right. It's not for Hillary Clinton.
Mark, I know it's dark, dude, but we got to be real here.
I hear you.
I know it's dark. This is a dark thought. But you know what? We've lived good lives. Our life ain't full of this right here. We got to deal with this. Now, what the hell are we going to do, Mike? I mean, I understand the Mossberg shotgun and the you in the Georgia Hills. I mean, I'm down for that. But what the hell are we going to do here?
There is
no way you're going to believe that if anything popped off, it was anything other than those two dudes at that house.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to believe it was anybody else.
No, I don't think I could. I guess to answer your question, Mike, as best I can, what are we going to do? We're going to react. I don't think I or you are ready to be proactive, to say, okay, that's enough. We still see, you and I still believe that there is a framework to do this peacefully and legally. So what are we going to do? We're going to wait and see if that framework holds. And if it does not, if something occurs over the next 16, 17 months, then I think the barricades will go up, and then I think we will react. But you and I are not going to be proactive. We're not going to do anything as long as you and I believe that the framework is still there. Now, once the framework has been pulled away, and I admit it's close to being pulled away, but it hasn't been pulled away yet, not completely.
Isn't this hollow? I mean, you know, one minute, you know, it's box cutters. The next minute, it's nuclear weapons. And then it's some dudes in Miami and a chick with a banana in her ear. And then this dude walked across the street and his eyes was cocked. I mean, it's just all over the place. And Chertoff, his butt itches. So therefore, I'm about to get killed and you about to get killed. Like you said last night, it's just all over. It's hollow. It's like it's hollow.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the infrastructure is completely hollow. I felt this during Katrina. It's like it's hollow. It's like a joke. If we went up to the White House and knocked on it, it would tip over.
Yeah.
Is anybody home? Do they act afraid? I'm going to ask you, Mike. Does Chertoff act afraid? Does Bush act like he's afraid of it? Do they act like they're being stalked? No.
They do not.
They're telling me that I'm being stalked. You're going to get killed. I don't, man.
It's hard. It's difficult. I hear you, Mike. I don't know what to say except.
And I'm like you. You come in, you know. You think about it, and then you try to dip back out and appreciate your life and your family, and you know what I mean. And then you wake back up. Something else comes across the news.
Mm-hmm.
Something else they're trying to. I don't like being punk. I ain't no punk. You know, maybe that's what it is, Mike. Maybe it's because we're not afraid of nothing. Maybe that's why they don't phase us. I was telling my mother last night. I said, Mom, I think it gets down to whether or not you're a fearful person, whether or not this junk works on you.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right.
If you're not afraid, then you just, man, forget them. Bring it on.
Mm-hmm.
Bin Laden want to get it on, let's get it on. Like you said, armed resistance. You want to get it on, let's get it on. What happened to all that talk, dude? What happened to come to the White House? You know, like they portrayed him. Texas, you know, all this rugged. What's all that? What happened to all of that?
Yeah.
We're men, man. Why are we acting like punks? I want to say something else, but you know.
I know.
We are men. Why are we acting like this? We are men. Men. My butt itches. I think we might get hit.
Yeah, Tony.
I got a funny feeling in my stomach. I ate something. Hell, it was gas. Maybe that's why his gut was. I don't know, man.
I hear you, Mike. I hear you, Mike. All right, now look. Will you do me a favor? And I'm not trying to patronize you, and I'm not trying to be. I'm not trying to get over on you or anything of the sort. Will you do me a favor right now and just Just take a deep breath. You are really pissed off and you're really angry and upset, and I know that feeling because I'm that way about, 85% of the day. But we got to end the call now. So before we end the call, can we take a deep breath together? Will you do that?
Jack and Coke, man. Jack and Coke.
Okay, that too. But let's do a quick breath. On three. One, two, three. All right, Mike, stay in touch, please.
I'm the product of your loins, man.
I'll talk to you later, Mike. All right.
Here comes the revolution. Time for retribution. Here comes the revolution. Time for retribution.
Obviously killing Americans, but they're killing a lot more Iraqis.
Ten before the hour. Mike, put me in your squad, man. I swear to God, we've just gotten an avalanche of calls or emails here about Mike's phone call. Mike, you came through loud and clear. That's one of the reasons, you know, Kathy kept saying to me, say something before the silence triggers alarm bells in our affiliates. But Mike blew me away. I mean, he's telling it exactly like it is. He said in 6 minutes what it takes me 3 hours to say every night. I don't know what to say, Mike, except I respect you. And when the time comes, I hope we're in the vicinity of each other. I swear to God. And I'll tell you something else. I've noticed on this program and other programs that I occasionally listen to, I try to stay away from talk radio because I can't stand it. I just can't stand it. I did catch a bit of Hartman today with Mr. Fine on, the guy who wrote the articles of impeachment against Clinton, but who is now suggesting that if the framers of the Constitution were alive today, they would, I'm paraphrasing here, but they would take up armed resistance against this regime in D.C., Bruce Fine, who is I never liked him. I made disparaging remarks about him back in the 90s, the end of the 90s, when they were going after Clinton. Just like Bob Barr is coming out from the underbrush now, saying basically the same thing. Bruce Fine and Bob Barr were two of the most vehement go-get Clinton types I've ever come across. But on Hartman's program today, talking about the crimes that are being committed of daily, hourly, by George W. Bush. Jesus, God. But I have noticed that, like Mike is certainly an example. I get a lot of emails that contain that kind of anger. I can tell by the misspellings and the capitalizations and so on and so forth, that rage, and Mike just happened to be the one to get through tonight with that rage, and it's it is a kind of righteous anger that overthrows dictators. So, thanks for calling, Mike. Regarding the 22-year ex-soldier, the veteran, the subject line here, this is from Greg in Des Moines, the subject line, Tony and taking orders would not follow Bush's order to kill Tony's family. Greg writes, Dear Mike, Tony is splitting hairs about following the Commander-in-Chief's orders to kill innocents while not considering it a crime under military justice. Tony would never follow the Shrub's command to kill everyone in his hometown. Tony's problem is that he would kill strangers with strange languages, strange religions, looks, and dress for a military check in retirement, but would not kill friends and family for any amount of money. He would do so regardless of the criminality of the commander or the criminality of his own actions.
Can I say something about that a second?
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Well, you're asking me?
Yeah. You know, you're right. I am. What's wrong with me? I must not be feeling well. But I wanted to say was ever since that first segment you did about the massacre that the search
Marines?
And recovery troop, you know, the 26 dead children.
In Haditha, yeah.
It's just so horrifying to me, and it seemed like that caller came in exactly after that, almost in defense.
All right, now, which caller? Tony, the military guy, or Mike, the guy who's pissed off?
Tony? Yeah, back, you know, first hour. Tony, the military guy who was saying, well, we've got a great military,
right,
and despite
right.
the fact that we don't have armored Humvees, and these kids are having to buy their own body armor and make things out of recycled aluminum mm-hmm. that they find, you know, to
yeah.
try to protect themselves. But regardless of that, and they don't have the training, I mean, from everything I've read, I'm not a military expert at all. But I guess the thing that bothers me is it was almost some kind of, almost sounded like a defense of that kind of mass killing. And the thing is, a mother of a soon-to-be 3-year-old, that bugs me to no end about that attitude is, do they not think that Iraqi families love their children? I mean, do they not think that they value their children?
Mm-hmm.
Do they not matter because they're brown people that they don't love like white people do? I mean, it's insanity to me. The attitude that's like, well, you know, women and children could hurt you, so we kill them too. And
yeah.
it's the same kind of pervasive attitude, I think, that was seen in Vietnam about the quote yellow people quote. You know, there was a sort of an infectious
racism.
Well,
it was a lot worse than yellow people, but go ahead.
Right, but I mean, I think that the military mentality, it's kill the towel heads, kill the gooks, they demonize whatever ethnic group they're attacking. I think that's why we have more sympathy for the Germans in Dresden and you know, the white people, quote, that we've had to kill over the decades than when it's some ethnic group. And
the Japanese in Hiroshima?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It makes it a little bit easier to just say, oh, well, you know, they're brown people, they're yellow people, they're orange people, they're purple people. They're not like us. They don't love their families. It's that kind of racism.
Yeah, I think it's even bigger than racism. It's the dehumanization of another human being, which I think transcends racism. Although, having been in the South now for almost 40 years and understanding the history of the South, racism and dehumanization sometimes intersect very neatly, with no effort at all. But
and I think it's instructed. I believe it's when you get in country overseas, I think that it's ingrained in their training that you have to hate them because they're different, and that makes them easier to kill.
We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It's about 7. Seth writes in, Kathy remembers that the same attitude existed during Vietnam, during Korea, and during World War II. I clearly remember the sentiment proffered that the so-called enemy does not love their children in the great film Hearts and Minds, when that meme was overlaid against a Vietnamese mother who was trying to crawl into the grave of her child who had been killed from direct fire. Powerful from Seth. All right, let's set the record straight here about the caller, Tony. This comes from DL. Mike, I served 9 years in the Army. Contrary to what the, quote, 22-year veteran, end quote, claims, and then parenthetically, I doubt he finished basic training, every member of the United States Armed Forces was trained on their obligation to resist unlawful orders issued by anyone in their chain of command. That resistance includes all necessary force up to and including deadly force. Examples of an unlawful order include intentional infliction of harm or loss of life upon civilians, intentional infliction of harm or loss of life upon unresisting prisoners, intentional infliction of harm or loss of life upon friendly forces who disobey and or resist an unlawful order. Failure, DL writes, of any military personnel to actively resist an unlawful order is a courts-martial offense, with penalties ranging from a dishonorable discharge to military execution. These rules are taught from day one and reinforced at least once a year, or at least they were when I served from 1979 to 1988. We were taught what was lawful or unlawful in detail with multiple scenarios presented. Even a recruit fresh out of basic school, boot camp, whatever, knew the rules before they were handed a weapon. It is, or at least was, unlawful to issue, follow, or fail to prevent the execution of any order considered unlawful. The so-called, quote, 22-year veteran, end quote, would know this if he served more than 22 days. I come across a huge number of wannabes who claim to have served, but clearly never did. I know a veteran when I see or hear one, and that guy is like the rest of the wannabes, all mouth and no action. Without exception, every real veteran I've met is alarmed with the Iraq occupation and the direction the Bush Crime Syndicate is taking this country. Even more alarming is the fact that the media, Congress, the judges, no one is doing anything to stop this downward spiral into a fascist dictatorship. Keep nailing these frauds. That's from DL. Thanks, DL. I appreciate it. All right, back to the phone calls here. Almadena is listening in Miami, Florida to WINZ. Hey, Almadena, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling regarding the executive signing statements and the seizure of property.
Uh-huh.
I used to live in Paraguay where there was a dictatorship for almost 35 years. I moved here with my then 2-year-old son because when I was a teenager, we had to hide books. My family was in opposition to the government, and basically they just started taking money. My family was very affluent. They were kicked out of the country. I was kicked out of school for saying things against Stroessner. That was when I was 12.
Mm-hmm.
And basically when I came here, I was just so illusioned. I just started taking classes, poli-sci classes. It was just so interesting to find this amazing experiment, these people. And I became a citizen about 3 years ago. I've been living here for about 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I'm going through the whole thing again. And I've never been actually scared in this country.
Wait a second. You're going explain that, Almadena. You're going through what? The sense of what? Go ahead.
Just the sense that I'm living under the dictatorship again, you know? I left all my family. Mm-hmm. I left everything because I did not want to be told what to read, when to read, and how to read it, you know?
Yeah.
And I've worked very hard. I made my way through college. And suddenly I'm here, and people have education. Unlike in Paraguay, not everyone has access to education. You have access to books. You have access to so many things. I've been volunteering for Move On. Every time I can call my representative, I do that. I've been doing everything, and I just feel like I'm going through a worse dictatorship, if you will, because this is the biggest power. This is the biggest country. This was a great experiment. This should not be happening. And I don't know what to do. I mean, can I volunteer more hours? I mean, because I don't see anything changing.
God, Almadena, and first, as someone who was born here, a native citizen, I apologize to you, an immigrant citizen. You know, both of us are now have the same status. We're both citizens, but you know, I and most of my family was born here. Although my grandparents were immigrants. But let me just apologize to you for the shock of what you're saying, what you're feeling. I'm embarrassed that I and my fellow native-born Americans have allowed this to happen. We, of all Americans, and I realize there are native-born Americans, not native-born Americans, people are in the process of becoming Americans. This is a nation of immigrants. We're all immigrants to one degree or another, except the indigenous people who are here. But all the rest of us, black and white, brown, whatever, you know, we are citizens, and it should have been up to us to prevent this from happening. But you know what happened on December 12th, 2000, mm-hmm. when the United States Supreme Court ended the counting of the votes in Florida, even though there was ample evidence that there was fraud involved and that Bush and the Republican Party were stealing the election. That was the day that America should have come out off its ass, out of its easy chairs, taken to the streets, and refused to go home until the votes were counted and the person elected, whether we agreed with Al Gore or not, that the person elected got the office. So I am embarrassed. I'm embarrassed to get a phone call from you, and I apologize.
The thing is, for the first time in my life, I voted 3 years ago, and I was just so proud. I mean, I'm so proud of being an American, and people don't realize the consequences of not doing anything, because there's going to be a point, and I was listening to the op-ed piece that you were reading yesterday, there's going to be a point where things are just going to become so overwhelming, where people are going to start disappearing, where people are going to lose everything. You don't understand how dictatorships work. I mean, people have to start doing things. And to tell you the truth, I don't know what to do, because it's mind-boggling. I moved from D.C. to Florida about 3 years ago. What a big mistake it was. But here I'm closer to my family. Mm-hmm. And people here, totally not concerned about politics. It's amazing, because it amazes me, because politics affects every part, every aspect of your life. I told my mom the other day, when are you coming to visit? You know what she told me?
Mm.
Oh, like, I'm going to go to a dictatorship again.
Where does she live?
She lives in Paraguay, for Christ's sake.
Where does she live?
She lives in Paraguay.
Oh,
which is one of the most corrupt countries ever. She doesn't want to come here, because I've been telling her how you go to the airport, they pad you, seriously, Mike, this is awful. This is horrible, horrendous. I remember my aunt was pregnant. She was like 8 months pregnant, and we were having a dinner at my uncle's. And we were actually just people like liberal-minded, you know, in opposition to the government. The Marines broke in there. They gassed us, okay? My aunt lost a baby. I mean, this is like, so in a way, I didn't like the government as much, but when I came here, I started learning about the really amazing people that created this country, and then I was just so proud to become one, and now I'm thinking, oh my God, what's happening? What should I do? Because it's very hard to be able to live when you know all these bad things and people being killed, you know?
I know.
Just for the profit and lack of, I don't know what it is. I don't know what to tell you. And what are we supposed to do? Please tell me.
I wish I could. The only thing I can come up with is what I said a few moments ago, and that is there will come a time, and I have to believe this, where if this continues, there will be enough Americans who will react in a way to stop it. I don't know what else to say, Almadena. I don't know what else to say.
I really hope it comes through, Mike, because people need to understand, Americans need to understand, got to wake up. This could not go worse. I mean, it will get worse if people don't do things. And you have to do it because this is about preserving the Constitution. This is about preserving freedom. This is about preserving what we believe in. And if we don't do anything, then we're as bad as they are.
I hear you. Almudena, thanks for calling, and I hope you stay in touch. Please stay in touch, okay?
Thank you, Mike.
Take care.
Here's the pen, here's the X. Put your name on the line. Don't worry about the fine print, please sign here. Please sign here. Put your name on the line. Don't worry about the fine print, please sign.
We will apply the immigration laws. We're saying welcome to America. Why don't you share information with us?
What a sick bastard. Emma and George writes, Mike, about our last caller there. Mike, your caller is not the first immigrant to come here and realize that we have never lived up to the beautiful words in our documents. The difference now is a sense of helplessness that washes over us all and the willful ignorance that pervades this society on every level. Thanks, Emma. In response to the question, what to do, we still have a remedy, and this is what I'm trying to tell Mike, the caller from New York, who is right out there on the edge, like I am most of the time. We still have the framework. We still have the tools available, and it's called impeachment. And I don't know what Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid have to hear from the American public, from the American military. Are they waiting to hear something from the business community, maybe? If so, the business community is going to do nothing. The business community always has, the capitalist community, I should say, not the business community. I'm not talking about little, small businessmen. Hell, that's me. But the capitalist rulers have always lusted after and sought fascism. That's what they want. That defines what unbridled capitalism is all about. I don't care if it's German or Spanish or Italian or American or Russian. It doesn't make any difference. Capitalism lusts after, sleeps with, has sex with fascism. That's all it wants. It doesn't want communism. It doesn't want democracy. It lusts after fascism. And when I stop and think that perhaps the only thing holding back the enactment of the United States Constitution as written, when we're faced with a criminal enterprise like Bush and Cheney, that the only thing holding back the function of the Constitution is Nancy Pelosi, I start to lose it. I start to lose it. And don't send me emails telling me, well, you're attacking Democrats. I don't give a goddamn if she's a Democrat. I don't care. I don't care. What is it going to take? Excuse me. Before people like Nancy Pelosi, to whom we gave the power, we gave it to her, we gave it to her. We designated her to enact the Constitution and remove this miserable fascist from office. Legally and peacefully, while that can still happen. What's it going to take? Well, it's going to take what Mike was talking about, some courage. And if Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid or any of these Democrat Democrats who claim that they are Democrats, if they are not going to do what the Constitution mandates, this is not an option. This is not a choice. This is not sitting around thinking, well, can the Republic stand another impeachment? That's not what this is about. But if all these Democrats, Clinton and Obama and Edwards and all of them, all except Kucinich, if all of these Democratic candidates for the presidency are going to keep their goddamn mouths shut about impeachment, I'm sorry. If they're going to just sit back and allow this to happen. Well, you finish the sentence. Again, I apologize for the language.
Life is funny. Skies are sunny.
Twenty-sixth before the hour. Peter writes in, Mike, don't blow your bolts, my friend. Impeachment does not mean removal from office. Really? There aren't enough votes in the Senate. Republican criminals and co-conspirators won't do it. That is where the dog is buried. I don't know what that means. Let's just hope there is something left of this country by January 20th, 09. Hang on, all we can do, sadly, regards Peter in Delray Beach. No, I disagree, Peter. I don't agree with the impeachment does not mean removal from office. Of course it doesn't. But if the Democrat Party, if the Democrats, the Democratic Party leadership, if they do nothing, while this obvious and blatant attempt to move this country from what remains of our democracy straight into fascism, if they do nothing, then they are worse than Bush. They are worse than Bush and Cheney. Pelosi and Reid wind up being worse than Bush and Cheney if they do nothing. We are not smarter than Pelosi and Reid. I'm not saying necessarily they're smarter than us, but we are not smarter than them. They understand what is going on in this country. They know about these directives. If I can read these damn things on this radio talk show, don't tell me that Pelosi and Reid don't understand what this miserable bastard in the White House is doing. Now, it's up to them to take action. As long as we still maintain that we are not ready to take to the streets in a manner that would require a reaction from the government, as long as we maintain that there is enough of a framework left, a legal framework, to do something about this, and if we, that is, our representatives, do nothing, then damn them. And worse. So the framework is there. And if impeachment is begun, if the House Judiciary Committee begins to hold hearings and produces evidence that leads to the indictment, the articles of impeachment, and the American public can hear it, can really, truly hear it. The 70% of the American public that says Bush and Cheney do not deserve to be in office. What the hell do the Democrats want? Do they want 100% support? They're never going to get it. if the impeachment hearings begin, where the American public and then the press, the media, forced to cover it, how are they going to avoid it? And the American public understands what's going on, because the vast majority of Americans right now do not or does not understand what is happening. Oh, sure, they're against the war, they're against Bush, they're against Cheney, they're against the Congress, they're against all of it. But they don't understand. Impeachment hearings would force the understanding. Force it. And then pressure could be applied to 10, just, I'm sorry, 17. Is that how much we need? 17 Republican senators. Surely to God there are 17 Republican senators who would respond to the people in their states who say, look, we didn't know it was this bad. Get these bastards out. That's why I'm so angry at Pelosi and Reid. And that's why I don't buy this weak need. Oh, well, we can't do that, Mike, because we don't have the votes in the Senate. They didn't have the votes in the Senate when they tried to get Clinton. But the Republicans had an objective, and that was to destroy, to begin the utter, absolute destruction of the faith Americans still maintained in their system of government. And they were wildly successful. But the Democrats? Well, we can't do that because, you know, the votes aren't there in the Senate. They'll be there. This is why I get furious. Back to your phone calls. Melvin is calling from Texas, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Melvin, Melvin, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing good. You know, you're my sister's hero.
Well, everybody has to be something.
She have you on XM, I think it is. I have Sirius. But anyway, I want to make a few points.
Go ahead.
First of all, the caller, the man with 22 years of military experience, I don't think he was condoning the activities of the military. I think what it was that by him being a veteran and by him being part of the military prior to the 1979 doctrine, when they changed the military code of uniform justice, I mean, military uniform
right,
code
right,
of justice.
Right.
Okay. Back then, you took an oath to defend the country against all enemies, foreign and domestic. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you still take the same oath.
Yeah, but see, but back then, the consequences were different. You took an oath. You went in and you did your combat or whatever, and usually officers were held accountable.
Okay, Melvin, with all due respect, what is your point, sir?
Okay. Well, now it has changed. You got to check
no,
the
it hasn't.
Involved.
No.
I beg to differ. Believe me, I'm against this war. I fought in Honduras. I served two terms. I served one term in the Army and one term in the Coast Guard.
Wait a minute. You fought in Honduras?
Yes, I did.
For who?
You didn't even know there was a war in Honduras, did you? Well, actually, it wasn't a war.
Melvin, listen, I appreciate you calling, man, but I've got to move on. I'm sorry. You got a bad phone connection, and if you fought in Honduras, you should be ashamed to get on the phone with me. So, let's just move on. Edie is calling from Montgomery, Alabama. Edie, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Mike.
Hey, Edie.
I think your caller, Mike, said it all for all of us, didn't he?
He got damn close to it.
Boy. Well, when the time comes, I hope I can get close enough to one of them to kneecap them with my walker before they shoot the head. But I was going to share with you my theory of the coming false flag, and I hope it doesn't happen because it'll be hell.
Yeah.
But, you know, they got to be about through with their boy Bush. And what better way to use him than to have a terrorist assassinating? Cheney sworn in as president, you know, declares state of emergency. All these thugs that are already located all over the country in airports and all, they're ready to go. They fan out. And then, man, whoa. But I never thought I'd live to see the day. And I lived through the 60s. And it was a pretty damn paranoid time then, too.
Uh-huh.
This is a whole different animal that I don't know what to say. It's like they're not even human.
I hear you.
So, anyway, my sister told me, she said, well, don't tell anybody that. Don't give them any ideas. I said, I don't think Cheney needs me to give him any horrendous ideas. But I just don't be surprised if that's the next false flag, because he's pretty useless by now. Everybody knows he's a puppet.
Well, I hope, Edie, that we don't have that occur to us. It scares the bejesus out of me. Edie, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. This is from Kathy in Green Bay regarding impeachment. When Bruce Fein, Bob Barr, and Richard Viguerie are for impeachment, and I agree wholeheartedly with their reasoning, why in the hell aren't the Democrats? I, too, am tired of hearing the excuses. Pelosi doesn't want to appear to put herself in charge? Fine. Refuse the office and let it go to Robert Byrd. We have more important things to do? What, more important than restoring our constitutional democracy? Really? My own representative actually wrote this to me. Quote, while it may be true that President Bush and Vice President Cheney lied to the American people and took us to war based on lies and deceptions, our efforts should be directed in a more positive direction, building a better nation for all of us. End quote. That's an incredible statement. I think that Democratic politicians think that impeachment is motivated by a revenge against Bush. As Tom Hartman said, lots of us don't give a damn about the fate of Bush or Cheney. I can hold out for 18 months, but waiting for Bush to leave won't restore a system of checks and balances, if he leaves. By the way, if you didn't catch it, the website that Bruce Fein referred to is this, the AmericanFreedomAgenda.org. The 10 reasons that Fein referred to are right there. AmericanFreedomAgenda.org. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. All right, 10 before the hour. let's do it this way then. Thanks to the crew who put the program together tonight. The program was engineered and co-produced in Phoenix at KPHX, our flagship station, by Ian Huff. Excuse me. Chris in Minnesota is our senior correspondent. Billy Foster monitors the NovaMradio.com chat room. And thanks to Mark Marshall and the militant moderators at MikeMolloy.com on the message board. And Catherine Bay, who is the executive producer of this program. All right, back to your phone calls. Dennis is calling from Santa Rosa, California, listening on the quake. Hey,
yeah,
Dennis.
Hi, Mike. Hey, how you doing?
Hi.
I'm good. Yeah, just a few suggestions. I heard the woman say she wasn't sure what to do. I don't know that this will work, but it's my suggestion. I think at this point we still have over a year left before the next election. It's time to take a lot of the people that are on the Bush team out of the cloak of secrecy and put their face and their personalities in the light.
Yeah, that's why impeachment is so necessary.
Well, I mean people like the behind the scenes that engineered the energy policy the people that own the companies that are profiting from the war, the weapons manufacturers, names that you don't normally hear.
All right, now hold on. Where should all this be published?
Well, I think there's probably a good site on the internet that we could put these people so that, you know, up front, so that the whole world can know who they are.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I wanted to make sure we're on the same page here, because mainstream media, for the most part, is owned by the military-industrial complex, and therefore they're going to do everything, and they continue to do everything, to promote the idea of fascism in this country. Mainstream media, especially television, is not going to do something like what you're suggesting, because the blurred lines of shared ownership between weapons manufacturers, for example, and mainstream media would become so clear and apparent to most Americans. And it's amazing to me that most people don't draw the connection between General Electric, a major, if not the largest, producer of weapons on Earth, and NBC, and MSNBC, and CNBC. It's all owned by General Electric. And
right.
Where it concerns MSNBC, Microsoft is a partner.
We need to make these tie-ins.
Well, yes, that's true. But and I agree with what you're saying. But if the evidence is going to be put out there, it's going to have to be what you said on a website, where people can get the information until that website is destroyed by the government or destroyed by Microsoft. So
we have to start somewhere.
Well, I agree, but I maintain that the place to start is with impeachment.
I agree.
To focus a bright light on this corrupt, filthy administration and what it's doing. You know, I can't get my mind around the fact that Nancy Pelosi still refuses to allow the House Judiciary Committee to begin gathering evidence regarding articles of impeachment. It's just staggering to me.
Another idea. All the states that have Democratic leadership and that are the majority are Democrats, I think that these governors need to say, to be pushed into telling their constituents that in the case of some sort of martial takeover, that it might be a good idea now to start thinking about arming yourself, putting a weapon in your family's home, so that these people, Republicans and whoever, the people coming to light that are backing Bush, know that it's not going to be an easy fight. And these militias that supposedly that they're going to pay, the families of these militias need to start thinking about the fact that their loved ones have drank too much of the punch. And possibly they could have some influence on these the men that are going to be told to train their weapons on fellow Americans. We cannot let this come down to a fight between Republicans and Democrats on our own streets. We need to let them know that we are powerful, we are prepared to defend ourselves,
okay.
And that, you know...
Yeah, I hear you, and that makes sense, Dennis, and I appreciate you checking in. All right, I want to share this email with you before we're out of time. This is from John in Vancouver, British Columbia. He writes, "Hi, Mike, don't know if you had this on your show, but Senator Russ Feingold wrote a diary the other day at Daily Coast giving his lame-ass reasons for keeping impeachment off the table. They were exactly the same talking points as the previous listeners, a member of Congress, gave her in the email that your listener sent you. Here's an excerpt from Feingold's diary. I fully respect the anger and frustration many Americans feel with this administration. I share much of it. But on balance, I think Congress's time is much better spent ending the war in Iraq, conducting the oversight that was absent for the last 6 years, and advancing progressive legislation." And then there's an update from Feingold. "I know that many of you disagree with my approach to this issue, but I thought it was important to make it clear where I'm coming from and explain why I am not calling for impeachment." I mean, all right, thanks, John. I appreciate it. What the hell are we supposed to do? I mean, it's Russ Feingold. When he says we should be working to end the war in Iraq, how are you going to do that, Russ? How are you going to do that with no majority in the Senate? Joe Lieberman will switch sides at the drop, just at the drop of a drop of oil. He's gone. You know that as well as I do. Everybody knows that. Work on progressive legislation. How are you going to get it passed, Russ? Bush will veto it. No. No. So what are we to believe? Feingold is part of the conspiracy? Good God Almighty. Not even Russ Feingold, huh? Well, I'm surprised that Russ Feingold wrote that. Thanks for participating in the program tonight. I'll see you tomorrow night. In the meantime, take it care. take care, and keep it lit. Okay, keep it lit. Just keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.